Welcome to the Lucha Lounge Podcast. I am your host, Elijah Kang, a sound designer by day, but by night, I am a pro wrestling connoisseur, the proud owner of two cats, and the host of this, the Lucha Lounge Podcast. This podcast is all about giving uncommon people a platform to share their ideas and stories with all of you. So thanks for listening. Here we go. The 15th guest on the Lucha Lounge Podcast is a musician and singer-songwriter. We talk about the writing and recording process of his recent EP, Mountain Songs, his experience as the new lead guitarist of The Fortunes Found, and how his songwriting has evolved over the course of his life. He also performed several songs live in studio. So without any further delay, please welcome my guest and very good friend, Anthony Dante. Boom. And we're live with Anthony Maravelli.
Yeah.
A.K.A.
Anthony Dante.
Anthony Dante. Yeah. And, man, so this has been a long time in coming.
Yeah.
And
this is nuts.
For those of our listeners that don't know, Anthony was the one that came up with the name Lucha Lounge.
Oh, dang.
Mm. Lucha, you got to be right up on it, dude.
It's totally you. Because if you guys don't know, Elijah's a massive wrestling fan. And I, too, was a huge wrestling fan, although not as enthusiastic, I guess you would say.
Yeah. Anthony was the one that came up with Lucha Lounge when we were recording his EP,
yeah.
Mountain Songs.
Mountain Songs, yeah.
Which is still...
We did that last year, and it feels like it was...
It feels like ages ago, right?
Yeah, or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. A lot of stuff has happened.
Yeah, man. 2018 was a crazy year.
Why?
You know? I got married.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I know. I'm in the club. I got the
ring and everything.
The classic dad ring, as I call it. The golden, you know what I mean?
Well, that's your style. That's your old school is your style.
Yeah. No, this was a good year. I mean, a lot of weddings. So I kind of put the music on pause for a little bit.
Mm.
Although, you know, you're always playing, always writing and stuff, but just not
performing
public facing. Yeah. So it was a good time, you know, a little self-reflection. You get married. It's a big thing, you know, like it's a sacrifice, but in a good way.
It's a compromise. It's a game of compromises.
Yeah. Yeah.
How is being married kind of changed your writing? Mm. Because I know you have been writing more new songs after we worked together and after you've gotten married too. So how has that changed?
Mm. Yeah, I definitely approach music as, how do I say this politely? Not as superficial or as public facing. It's definitely more of an internal personal thing for me. So, you know, I think Mountain Songs, the themes there were all about trying to find out, you know, where's your home? You know, where are you going in life? What meaning are you trying to find? And so once you get married, a lot of those questions are answered for you. And so you approach, at least I approached music in a different way. It's more about stability. And because when you're married, you are like a ship that is moored from the storms of life because you have a partner to weather the storms with. So if you find a good partner, that is, maybe that person is the storm for you.
I was about to say. Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I feel more strong. I feel more stable. My wife's awesome. I think people like her more than they like me anyway. So that's
mean, I do. I mean, I do for sure. I'm just kidding. That's some pretty good insight into that.
Yeah, absolutely. So approaching music has been different. Usually I'm a blues guy.
Exactly.
So that comes from a relatively less stable place.
Right. Because blues are all about tough times, tough women, tough experiences.
Yeah, just being down and out.
Right.
You know, and I think everyone can... The reason why the blues is always around is because everyone always feels down and out at some point in their life. And so now that there's less of that, it's definitely different. But, you know, it's all about just opening up yourself to whatever inspiration wants to kind of creep in.
Right.
And then making sure you don't forget it.
So check this out. I wanted to ask you, as you brought that up, it reminded me. So, like, I guess the best similarity is, like, you know, like rappers these days, they get married and they still sing about murdering people and going to strip clubs and, you know, all of that stuff. Mm. But then on Instagram, they're like, oh, but my wife and, you know, I'm a married man and stuff like that. So with you and the blues, do you ever feel that kind of like dichotomy in your writing and your actual life?
Absolutely. Yeah. And dichotomy is a funny word because it assumes that there are different internal structures going on there. So like, can you be a gangster Or rather, can you be a loving father and still rap about being a gangster?
Right.
And sure, you can. You know, of course you can. If that stays relevant and you're making money and it's your profession, then, you know, you're laughing at the bank. Who cares?
Right.
But I think that well of inspiration will dry up rather quick.
Hmm.
And so you have to kind of fundamentally change your outlook so that you can produce things that are relevant if you want to.
Right,
maybe
right,
you
right.
don't care. You know, maybe you just want to keep singing or performing those songs, and maybe you have compartmentalized that aspect of your life. So,
right, right, right.
You know, really you're living for your kids or your wife, but this is just, you know,
like a character
going
almost.
To the office. Right, yeah.
Right, right.
And I think that is very common, because most rappers, I would assume, hit their peak when they're younger.
Mm.
So, you know, you're talking about 18, 19, 20, maybe up until 25.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I was completely different when I was that age.
That's true. That's true too.
And so I think in order to, I mean, I guess not to be stereotypical, but hip hop, I mean, look at the guys who are still around that are magnificent.
Right.
They're kind of older. You know, Jay-Z.
Ice Cube.
Yeah.
Dr. Dre, these guys.
And I don't even think they're doing a lot of music now. Maybe they're producing, but they're, you know, they're entrepreneurial, I think.
Do you find that about yourself? Do you feel like, oh man, if I want to play the blues, I still have to keep up that kind of like almost like a bluesy persona, that you know, tall, dark stranger with the guitar case going into these CD bars.
Very
like,
cool.
Do you feel like you need to hold on to that side of it?
Maybe. I think like especially when you write a song, it's like a little time capsule. It's kind of like a memory that you can access, and then when you access it, you are kind of programmed into whatever mentality or emotional scaffolding that you were previously in.
Right,
so, like,
right.
when I play a song now, like, say I play a song from Mountain Songs, the EP that we recorded together, it is going to be hopefully the same emotional energy, but now I'm just remembering where I was in my life when I wrote that song, and hopefully you can kind of let that mental idea stay relevant and
I do get that.
Yeah. For instance, when you play the blues, personally, when I'm playing lead guitar, I'm a million miles away. Even more than I'm singing. Like, singing is more of a present activity for me. Like, I feel more
connected
and also just in the moment, where when I'm playing like lead guitar, especially on a blues track, I'm gone. Like Bob Seger, a million miles away.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just like totally gone. And I think a lot of people know what I'm talking about. It doesn't matter if it's music or basketball or whatever, like that kind of phrase, in the zone.
Yeah.
You basically disappear. You know, you just go into yourself, and then sometimes you come out of it and you're like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
You
know? It's like trance-like.
Yeah.
That's what I was talking to a yoga instructor, and she said that's what flow is all about. When you're in the flow, mm-hmm. nothing really matters, and you're so concentrated on doing this one thing that you kind of back out. And that, you know, I feel that when, you know, in the times that I do yoga, on the rare times that I play guitar myself, but like for me, it's when I was in the studio recording with artists, and even when we were recording together, we would spend in this small studio, we would spend like 4 or 5 hours, and it was like that.
I know, it's crazy. Yeah. I think if you're someone who's passionate about something, it doesn't matter what it is, you get to a point where that starts to happen more often.
Hmm.
And there's growing pains to get to that point.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like, what's that scene in Forgetting Sarah Marshall? I think. I didn't
watch that movie.
Oh, so you never saw it? Paul Rudd's trying to teach someone how to surf. And he's like, do less, do more. All right, do less, do more. It's like a comedy thing, but that's true. Hmm. Like, sometimes you're doing something too mindful. Less mind, more do.
Right.
And sometimes it's the opposite. So when the balance kind of goes in the middle, that's when the magic happens. It's like you're not actively trying. It's just happening.
And you definitely notice it when people are in there. You know, when musicians, especially when they're in the groove, or a band is like really locked in with their chemistry on stage, you know it.
You can just tell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful thing for sure, man.
Yeah, that's live performance stuff. Studio's all different.
Yeah, studio becomes very... Then it becomes very technical, and it becomes very...
Intentional.
You become very critical.
Very critical.
Of what you're doing. And just to call it back, that's why I felt like our experience on Mountain Songs was so great, because that was old school live to two.
Yeah, it was raw, man.
We didn't overdub it or anything.
No MIDI. Not that I remember, unless you snuck
it
in there.
I didn't sneak anything.
No MIDI, you know, a few different takes, obviously, just to kind of get the perfect one. But other than that,
it was essentially a live performance. Yeah, a live album.
I can honestly say it was a live album. I mean, you know, you're dubbing solos and that kind of stuff, but we tried to stay true to the takes.
Yeah,
and I think,
I think it reflects in the body of work that we created.
Mm.
I mean, after we finished, and it took a while, you know, different versions, different mixes and stuff like that. Once it was released into the ether, people that I just met, like strangers, will be like, oh, I know you because you worked on Anthony's record.
Oh, that's cool. That's
and
really
then
cool.
They're like, it sounds so good. Mm. And I was like, yeah, we did it in my bedroom.
But that's like the best because you want to know what? You can go to some of the best producers in the world. I feel like the quality there was extremely good for the tools and the time that we had at our disposal.
For sure.
One cool thing was that we didn't feel rushed.
Yeah, we were just like, you know, I remember the first session that we had, we came in and we sat down, we started recording, and then we were there for like 3 hours.
Yeah.
And then we're like, you know what? Let's not use any of that.
This all stinks.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't that it was stinking. It was just that it was the first time that you and I had worked together.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was like, we're forcing it. We're like, oh, let's get the perfect takes. And once we abandoned that, we're like, dude, just play it like you're playing live.
That's
when the good performances started coming out.
That was fun. Yeah, we got to do that again.
We got to jump back in again.
Yeah, this time more instruments. Maybe a little more stuff going on.
Yeah,
I feel like that album was phenomenal, like especially if you're a musician and you're a singer-songwriter. I think it's a little more accessible, but you know, for the average listener,
it's not.
There's no drums.
Yeah, so there's no drums.
That's a huge thing.
Well, there's no other instruments except guitar and then your voice.
Yeah, harmonica on one, but other than that. Yeah, yeah.
Well, it was all you. You played everything. Mm. And then so it is as singer-songwriter as you can get.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it is, you know, stripped down. And that was why it was, I feel like, so indicative of who you were at that point of time.
Yeah, exactly.
When you were in Colorado.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah,
man.
That was awesome.
Thinking about it now, man, that was a good time too.
That was good, yeah. And the best part is, every time I come in here, there's like a new toy. There's a new thing.
New stuff.
There's a new microphone.
New gear.
This place looks great. You did a good job with
Gracias.
This.
Gracias. Yeah, Work in progress, man. Mm. Next time when you jump in for recording, it'll be different again.
Yeah.
But yeah, man.
Mm. So nowadays, you know, since the new year happened, no more weddings.
Yeah.
No more, you know.
You sure about that?
Well, you know, who knows? But shaking off the dust, getting out there playing live.
Well, you played recently with a Lucha Lounge veteran, Eli Lev.
Yeah, Eli Lev. Yeah. We were at the Pearl Street Warehouse, which is a kind of new venue, newer venue on the wharf. And it's super cool.
Mm.
It's like 9:30, except intimate. But it's the same, like the sound, the integrity of the sound is still there.
Right.
Like the sound techs were very good. The stage is fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's a perfect setting. You know, it's like you're not so distant
from the because artist. It's not like a huge riser.
Right. There's a mezzanine floor, but it's really not.
But I mean, the stage isn't like, it's not like a huge drop from where the people are standing. It is like right there, almost floor level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it looked like you were having a lot of fun.
It was fun, man. It's just good to, you know, when you do a lot of singer-songwriter stuff, especially for me, like I started off playing lead guitar. That was the thing that roped me into music.
Mm-hmm.
After college, I was in a band in college and it was really fun and, you know, house parties and all that and it's fun.
Basement shows.
That stuff. It's great. But then, you know, you move on in life and you're like, man, I want to keep playing music, but I'm not in a band. So what do I do? And so you like suck at singing for a really long time. And then I kind of just developed a little bit of bravery and started singing, like doing a lot of open mics. But it really wasn't until I was in Colorado that I like really felt like I cut my teeth there on singing. And that was the best because I had a lot of time, obviously, in the middle of nowhere. So there's really not much to do except things
practice,
that people used to do before Google and internet and all that stuff.
Right.
But I bartended out there and I would play. I worked at a ranch hotel. And so I got a chance to play for a lot of people in intimate settings, and it just made me sing. It was like, you got to sing, you know, you can't just play guitar. That only holds attention for so long. So, but now it's complete opposite. I'm back in action doing live stuff, and it feels good. got my pedal board going, yeah, my amps, turning it up.
So in 2019, we're sitting on the beginning of it right here. Is this year going to be lead guitar Anthony? And are you going to push push singer-songwriter Anthony out for a little bit? Or are you going to try to, you know, cultivate both?
Yeah, I'm open to everything. I think the impetus for playing out live is just to be around people who love music, not to be in a vacuum, just to kind of talk with people, meet people organically, you know. I think it rubs off. Like, I'm always trying to be around people who are more seasoned and more veteran and more skilled.
Right.
Because then, you know, you got to humble yourself and just understand that there's so much to learn all the time. And I'm, like, very, like, I love the blues. I love rock and roll. But there are so many genres. Like, you get me in a jazz band, I'm a little, like, silly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, get out of here.
Exactly.
So just being around musicians is the best.
Stretching yourself creatively.
Exactly. And so I'm working with Eli Lev and his band, The Forge Is Found. Mm-hmm. The musicianship in that band is unreal. The drummer, Mike, what's up? The bassist, Bo, what's up?
Shout out.
Yeah, shout out. They're just phenomenal musicians. And it was very easy to just walk in there and start picking up some of the lines.
Yeah, because, I mean, Eli Lev's stuff is very, you know, pop folk.
Yeah. It's happy stuff. It's a lot of songs in major key. And so I'm stretching myself that way because I tend to go more blues.
Yeah, minor stuff.
Minor stuff. So I this is good for me. You know, I'm stretching myself in the right direction.
Yeah. And like I've had the pleasure of having and listening to Eli Lev's music and having him in studio here and hearing him sing and play is completely opposite almost in terms of mood and vibe.
Yeah, I know.
In terms of musicianship also is very different. You're obviously super technical with your finger picking and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And how you incorporate lead lines even in the middle of, you know, your singer-songwriter stuff. You know, Eli Lev is a little more straight ahead and a little bit more poppy than your stuff. So It was interesting from the video that I saw on Instagram to see where Anthony would go working with a, for lack of better words, a more palatable form or genre of music.
Absolutely.
But you're killing it, dude.
It's fun. It's just a lot of fun. I just can't wait to be back on stage. Because playing live, if you're a musician, you know that that might be the best drug ever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that, there is no other thing. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that's why a lot of, you see like the Rolling Stones of the world, they just won't stop.
Yeah, they
you
just
know,
keep going.
It's because it's the best.
Yeah.
So why not? I mean, that's where I'm coming from now that I have the time.
Right.
It's like, it's a no brainer for me. So, and who knows? I mean, I'm open to other projects too. Hello. You
know? Look him up, man.
Right.
You want a great lead guitarist, I can attest to
his
ability and his professionalism. Yeah. What is this, a resume? Come on. Come on. All right. So this year is, at least the beginning of this year, more lead guitar. That's kind of like a thing you're pushing to. I remember there was a season in your life after you left our agency.
We were colleagues for a while.
Yeah, we were coworkers for a minute. But after you left, you were playing out like 4-5 times a week. And that was, it was crazy to see because your calendar and like the social media updates would be like, I'm here today, here tomorrow.
It picked up really fast.
Yeah.
It was great. I mean, I think I bit off a little more than I could chew because I did not foresee the schedule of events ahead of me. When you get married, you know, when you get engaged, you get married, you see 4, 5, 6 other weddings that you have to attend in the year. You're like, man, I don't want to.
Yeah.
The worst thing you could do is no call, no show because you had to go to a wedding. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I was like, you know, I'm going to cut my losses.
Pause.
But for a while, yeah, it was getting crazy.
Like, what was that like in regards to your songwriting? Because I remember when I was in a band out in Boston, before we started playing shows, it was like a nest for creativity because we would jump into studio time for 4-6 hours at a time and come up with all these ideas and songs. And it would really be like a time where we stepped forward with our music, right? But once we started gigging, shout out to Faces in the Floor, you know, once we started playing out a lot, that kind of took a back step because now you have to move forward with the material that you're comfortable with and that people are coming to see. So I remember that was kind of a struggle. So like we would go through phases where it'd be like, all right, writing time and then push that out and then writing time. Did you go through anything like that?
Absolutely. I mean, the truth is being a professional musician is a hustle. And I listened to Eli Lev's podcast that you guys did, and he said something that's totally true. He's like, you know, most of my time is spent promoting.
Right.
And so with that being said, yeah, if you're working on anything that's creative, you're doing that, you're promoting, you're playing out live, and then you're still trying to master something that you've already written.
Right.
So like you put out the album. Okay, cool. I want it to sound good when I play live. I want to remain true to what I put out. So I have to
practice.
Yeah. I mean, people are like, oh, you forget the words to your own song. And
all the time, bro.
It's more common than you think. And so that adds a pressure. And so, yeah, you know, I can totally understand how creativity can kind of get pushed aside. Mm. I'll be honest. One thing that I discovered about myself is I don't love to play in... So when you're a professional musician, oftentimes the best paying gigs are the ones you least want to play.
Right.
At least from my perspective.
Sure.
And you know, you're playing for 3-4 hours. That's typically what's normal in this area. And so if you can't do that or you're not willing to do that, that's a kind of a, you know, you get pushed down on the list. And if you have 3 or 4 hours of your own material that you love to play, then salute. Like, great.
Right, right.
But for most, I would say for most people, like, you're playing 3-4 hours of covers or at least 2 and
Wonderwall.
Yeah, man. And hey, people love to do that.
Yeah.
And I get that and I respect that, but that is just not me.
Mm.
And so I discovered that about myself. And I realized, I was like, man, I don't know if I'm the guy in a bar who's partially being listened to and playing, you know, Foo Fighters or
right,
something. You
right.
know what I mean? It just didn't appeal to me. And I was like, man, if I'm going to play a cover, I want to at least be in a band.
Right,
and play
right.
it live right. with the full sound instead of just...
At least you get the high of like being with the group on
right.
stage.
Yeah.
A lot more energy than...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, people still want to hear Tom Petty songs, so go play them.
Yeah.
You know, who cares?
Yeah.
But that just wasn't... It wasn't quenching the creative thirst that I think you were talking
nice.
About. So maybe that was another reason why I decided to go live full sound instead of the acoustic stuff. But with that being said, there's a... tremendous amount of singer-songwriters in the area. There's this one gentleman, his name's Dan Magnolia, who I think would be a great person for this podcast, but he's a musician, but he is just like a center for musicians. He was doing a lot of open mics for a while. Shout out to Dan. He was one of the first people I met here.
Powerful.
The powerful Dan Magnolia.
Yeah.
And so there's a tremendous amount of people who are doing their own singer-songwriter stuff and not doing the 4-hour covers.
Right,
but,
right.
you know.
It pays.
That's the thing. If you're...
The GB stuff pays, the general business stuff, like weddings or,
mm-hmm.
you know, coffee house.
Mm-hmm.
But then essentially you become, you know, your background music for people that are eating dinner or having coffee.
That's it.
And so, I mean, I get it. Like, if you want to stay true to your creative integrity, that's something that you definitely maybe don't see as something you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Willingly,
right?
But at the same time, got bills to pay.
Yeah,
and like you were saying, you got to get out there. You got to be in the public eye, you know, with other musicians, with people who are potentially going to become your fan. So it is a real balancing act that you have to play.
That's true. It's very true. Any night of the week, you could go out and see someone different.
Mm.
And so, why should people come see you?
Right.
You know, and I think when you play those gigs, people. You know, it's one thing to sound good when on a record, but if you can sound good live, especially by yourself, especially on an acoustic guitar, that's when you know that, hey, I'm not that bad at this, you know? Like,
and I think that's like your calling card, because you're a great guitarist.
Oh, thanks, man.
And then you're also a great singer. You have a very unique voice. And then this is one thing, you know, as we were leading up to this podcast, you know, I was reflecting back on the whole production process for Mountain Songs.
Mm.
And you have this way of drawing people in with generally the verses becomes very intimate because you play so soft and your voice is very... And then so like people, it's like you're almost leaning in to get what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
But then also there's this huge virtuosity when you bust on solo breaks in the middle of those songs. And it's just... It's not something that's really common.
Yeah.
I mean, you expect singer-songwriters to strum G, C, D, E minor,
right.
G, something like that. Mm. And, you know, sing songs about, oh, I was sad, but, you know, there's this girl. And granted, your songs are a lot sometimes about that too.
Sure.
But, like, even the writing is just so, like, when I hear your songs, it is very, like you were saying, I can feel what you were feeling. I can see what you were seeing when you were there at that time in Colorado or in, you know, the bar illegally.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It is great to see that songwriting still exist.
Yeah. I mean, I draw on a lot of influences. You know, one of my biggest ones, dude's name is Jason Isbell.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, go listen to the record Southeastern.
Yeah.
Which I think was he was in a band called Drive By Truckers. Shout out to John Bradley. and, you know, very hard, drunken Southern rock is how I would consider them. And then he, you know, had a lot of life stuff go on, came out with this album. And I think that was one of the main inspirational cornerstones of how I started writing. Jason Isbell is a phenomenal slide guitarist, phenomenal lead guitarist.
Great singer.
Great. Yeah. One of a kind voice. But if you were to just catch him at, you know, if he was by himself, you would have no idea that the dude can, you know, shred your face off. Yeah. And I always admired that because you push that to the side to do the thing that is the most meaningful to you.
Mm.
But then you hear him, Claire and I, my wife saw him live and he was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like the whole band. And so it's definitely possible. Music is weird now.
Yeah.
Like anything you love is out there, but it's not where you think you're going to find it.
What do you mean by that?
So I don't know. I would assume that most music listeners are sticking to what's popular,
sure.
Right?
Radio.
But, yeah, exactly. And then the other percentage of music listeners, I think, are forced into the weird playlists of the internet or the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of the indie curated kind of thing. And Pandora does a great job generating songs you might like, but otherwise you have to go out and seek these bands out. You know, you're not going to hear them on the radio. You're not going to hear them on, I mean, MTV. I don't even know if MTV is still around. Who knows? But podcasts like this are great, you know, stuff like that. So you kind of got to be a little adventurous.
Yeah, you have to look more. And it is almost like, because there's so much access and there's so much choice and there's, you know.
Yeah, and there's a lot of it. That's the other thing.
And it's so easily accessible.
Yeah.
And because of that, it's like, where do I even start? I'll just listen to the record that I know. You know, back in when records were popular, or even when CDs were popular, and those were the main thing, you would go to a record store and listen to the demos and be like, I found another one that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And then you buy that and take it home. Now it's like, if it doesn't suit your fancy in an instant, you're like, whatever, this is weird. This is weird. So,
yeah,
man. Very interesting.
Yeah. I think people want it though. Like people really want good music.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, who could have predicted that vinyl records are going to make a comeback?
Yeah, huge resurgence.
I think people just want to go analog. It's like a...
I don't, but you know, I get it.
Well, I mean, like you buy an album, it's almost like a gift from the artist to you, because I'm not going to print any vinyls because I don't, who's going to buy it? You know, it's a very select group of people.
Because they're a lot more expensive.
They're more expensive. You know, they require a little bit of upkeep. And if you have the right system, it's going to sound fantastic. But I feel like most people that listen to music, they just want to work out.
Yeah.
They want to drive to
have
work.
Phones.
Yeah. And that's great.
Or in the car. Yeah, man. That's interesting.
Mm.
So we were talking earlier about the first song you wrote.
Mm.
After you shook off all the, hey, I guess I could be kind of good at this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Belly Dancer, shout out to my college friend, Mark Shannon.
Powerful Mark Shannon.
The powerful Mark Shannon. Yeah. We need like a honk every time you give a shout out to someone.
Yeah.
We were in college. It was like a college break. He was like, hey, man, why don't you come back to Massachusetts? Sure. So his dad like snuck us into this super cool bar, like skipped the whole line. I think I was like 17 or 18 or something.
Right.
And I was like, this is awesome. And next thing you know, lights go down. I'm having a drink where I'm totally illegal. And like these beautiful ladies come out and they just start dancing. And I was like, holy crap. And so the song Belly Dancer sounds a little superficial, but it was a really cool experience when you're that young.
Mm.
And you know, you're kind of just like, whoa.
It's like you're overwhelmed with so many new experiences, like sexuality,
all
and
that stuff,
illegal activity, and drinking. Yeah,
like the fact that this, you know, my buddy's dad is like
right next to you.
Yeah. It's so cool. But I was in a band at the time, but that was the first song that I personally wrote where I was like, man, maybe I'm not bad at this. Like, maybe I could keep doing this, because there are a lot of bad songs that you write, as you know. You know, a lot of it is just attempts to sound like the artists you love.
Right.
You know, and it's, I think it's like that with everything.
Yeah.
No matter what you do, it's imitation first.
Yep.
Before you kind of discover your identity and before you've like taken all the pieces and brought them together. But those first steps that you're drawing on something. That's like the human condition. You know, we see something, we like it, we do it.
You know, ever since the beginning of music, everything is derivative, you know, anything with those notes, there's, you know, certain cultures that have like microtones and stuff like that. But for everybody else that is, you know, operating in Western music paradigm, everything is derivative. All those chords have already been invented. All those sounds, for the most part, have already been invented and have already been done. Everything that's breaking and new essentially has been done. So like everything afterwards is just a permutations of that. And how can I make this mine?
Right.
Yeah. That's a good point too.
Was it 12 notes?
Yeah.
Is that how many? That's it.
Yeah.
That's all you get.
That's all you get.
That's all you get.
And every single scale, every single guitar lick, already done it. You think you discovered something that B.B. King didn't do?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Come on.
That's why live is the best.
Yeah.
It's because you're there in that moment. Everyone there hears it, and then that's it.
And it's way more authentic.
It's authentic and it's raw, and that's, I don't know, more of that for me.
Yeah.
I'll take more of that.
So going back to the Belly Dancer song.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure.
When did you write it? Because you were 17 at the time when you experienced
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I started writing that probably a year after, maybe.
Oh, wow. So it was very recent. Not recent to now, but recent after the fact.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I remember, I think for Christmas, my parents bought me some recording stuff. This was when it was really like, you know, you had your M-Box, your audio thing, and
An M-Box.
Yeah, dude, you're just messing around, and you're like, what? Like, who cares if it sounds good? You're just like, I've recorded this.
Yeah.
And so that was one of the first songs that I put through the mill of my bedroom. Yeah, it was bad. It was good. It was all that stuff in between. But yeah, I still play it now. So what does that say? I think like songwriting is kind of, to make an analogy, it's like you're mining for gold. You're sifting the waters for gold. And the ones that stick with you, the little nuggets that don't go through the screen, those are the ones you keep. And so this is one of the ones I've kept. And so, yeah.
Let's hear it, dude.
Let's hear it. Let's do it. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. Dance for me. I'm only sure eyes only on my greed. I don't care, baby, see your way to me. Every hook of smoke fills the room. Still, all I smell is your dark perfume. All the men you move, you could bulldoze over me. Darkest night here, clap your tambourines for me. Electrify the air, baby, say your way. Baby, say your way into me. Melly dancer, dance for me. Melly dancer, how you move? I swear to God, it's only me, you in this room. I can hear your soul. I'm just a dollar sign to you. Belly dancer, dance some more. As all the men's green fall from you just down to the floor. Hey, bots, your dance, but you stole it hard with your eyes.
Clap your tambourines for me. Electrify the air. Baby, say your way to me. Oh, baby, say your way to me. I'm gonna say one. I'm gonna say. Your eyes are only on my green. I don't care, baby, say your way to me.
Yeah, man, that's a great song.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's a difficult song to play. There's a lot of finger picking. It's very delicate.
And that's the thing, yeah. Again, like I mentioned this earlier, but that's kind of like your signature style, that real soft, like
scary.
Intimate. Yeah.
It's scary. Like, but, I mean, I'm scared to play it. So like there's so much variable for bad.
So
like,
much just, potential yeah, for wrong. Failure.
Yeah, exactly. It's nervous.
But yeah, I really like that song. And thanks, and it's, you know, as you were playing it, I could really... You describe things so well with your lyrics. And that's one thing I wanted to touch on with you is that your lyricism is very simple. Mm. You don't use too much metaphors or analogy. You're just describing what you see, but you do it in a way where, coupled with your performance, I felt like I could see the bar with the smoke. And yeah. Then
it's the hardest thing in the world because as a musician, you know, anything art, like I was listening to Meng Lin, your discussion with her, and you guys are talking about art. And it's so true. Like, it's all subjective.
Right.
That's the first thing. The second thing is, if you are a so-called artist, do I intentionally choose to produce something that's palatable and accessible? Mm-hmm. Or do I take a more risk-oriented road and produce something that is true to what I am or who I am or any of that? And of course, just like we were talking about earlier, I think there's a perfect balance. But achieving that is extremely difficult.
Right.
You know, it's hard to... be someone who is, you know, lyrical and poetic and all that, but if no one listens to it, like, and if a tree falls in the wood, that kind of thing, you know,
right,
like,
right,
what, and there are 100 answers to that question. Yeah. Who knows? I mean,
because like a lot of the times I feel like the best creative works were creative selfishly, you know, it's like, this
exactly.
is a song that
yeah.
I want to capture how I feel at this moment, or like you were saying, a memory time capsule this moment, and who cares? But some works have a way of intersecting with what the public wants at the time.
Yeah.
And then that's when it's like a
cultural zeitgeist, if you will. Yeah. What's his name? Ray LaMontagne, who's another one of my huge, big influencers. I'm pretty sure, and I don't know, I'm sure I can get fact checked on this, but I know, right? Pull that up, Jamie.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, he recorded an album that was very much like what you and I did. It was like very raw, cut back instruments, but mostly like singer songwriter. I'm pretty sure it's unreleased now. And Ray LaMontagne's been around for almost 15 years or something like that. And I wonder if, like, he did that on purpose. Like, I wonder if he wrote that album and was like, this is me cutting my teeth as a musician, but I'm not going to send it out yet.
Right.
And then maybe when he's, like, 65, he's like, oh, by the way, bang. You know what I mean? This is that shit.
This is the real.
This is the real me. Who knows?
Yeah, man.
But maybe he just knew that.
It
wasn't the right time.
Yeah,
it wasn't the right time for him. And
Well, you hear so much about the saying he was ahead of his time, and you don't want to be ahead of your time.
Yeah, I know, right? You don't want to be Kurt Cobain, even though he was immensely popular, but kind of towards the end of his life.
Yeah, it was much later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, like you hear records, and you're like, dude, it's good, but it's weird.
Yeah,
and then sometimes, like a few years later, you're like, it's blowing up, and you're like. Dude, I called it.
Like, what is that about? It's the same thing with movies, with books, with everything. Like, Moby Dick, when Melville wrote that, he was hated for it.
Hmm.
You know, like, any movie that's pretty good, like a cult classic, Reservoir Dogs. Pretty sure people hated that.
Yeah.
You know, but now it's like a cornerstone of film culture.
Film.
Yeah. So who knows? Humans are weird. We're like, this is good, but we don't like it right now.
Right.
Why? Like, if a thing is good now, was it good before? If a thing was good before, is it good now? I don't know.
Well, we should take some DMT and explore. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, man. Oh, this is a little bit of a side track thing, but I recently, your favorite writer, one of your favorite writers,
Cormac McCarthy. Yeah, Cormac McCarthy.
Mm. I read his book, The Road.
Oh, dude, very good. You got through the whole thing?
Let me tell you about The Road. Our coworker Brandon, who built the Lucha Lounge desk,
I know,
by the way, with his hands.
That's a good guy to know.
He burned the top of this. That's why it's black.
Dude, he's a G.
Yeah,
he's so good.
Brandon is the
shout out to Brandon.
Yeah, powerful Brandon. Mm. Brandon is the guy who is also a great songwriter.
Oh my God, yeah, he's like, and he doesn't want anyone to know.
No, he's awesome. Mr. Secret.
It's the coolest shit ever.
Yeah,
I'm really good, but I don't care.
Yeah, he's what was I gonna say about him? Oh yeah,
Cormac McCarthy. Yeah,
yeah. So he was talking about Cormac, and I was like, I've never read his book. He's like, you should read The Road. And he's like, can I borrow it?
Mm.
And he brought it to work, and on a day that it wasn't that busy, I just sat in my office. I read the whole thing in one sitting.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's the best way to read it.
Great book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Super depressing.
Yeah. Me and my drummer from my last band were kind of the same. We had a lot of the same interests.
Mm.
And so I got really into Cormac McCarthy. And looking back on it now, like, he's very good, but there's this opinion in the literary world. Have you ever heard of a term postmodernism?
Yeah.
I guess one of the tenets of that idea is that there are an infinite amount of ways to perceive the world. And that almost everything you perceive is subjective. So I see a door, I explain a door in a completely different way that you see the door,
mm-hmm.
but it's a door. It's
still a door, yeah.
And a lot of people say that Cormac McCarthy is like, he's a little too postmodern. So he talks about all these infinitely possible things.
Uh-huh.
Really, the thing is like, where's the meaning? Everyone's looking for the meaning.
Right.
And so, you know, when you take an English class in university, I was an English major. There are an infinite amount of ways that you can perceive a text or a song, and so the thing is, they're all right, right?
Right.
Because what you see and what I see, how can I tell you that you're wrong?
Right.
How can you tell me that I'm wrong? When you look back on an infinite realm of possibility, there are a number of things that you should do right, even though there are other things that you could do. Like humans have not got this far because there are an infinite amount of things you could do. We got here because we chose some of those things.
And right, so my
thing is like, there are meaning to these books. There are meaning to these texts.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to look a little harder for it instead of just saying, oh, well, there's an infinite amount of ways I could look at this.
So
who cares?
Yeah.
Because then you become nihilist and then you become resentful and bitter about the world instead of.
Then you become Nietzsche.
Yeah, there you go. That's exactly what I'm saying. So yeah, Cormac McCarthy is great. Everything he writes is. You got to read Blood Meridian.
Yeah, that's the next one that I need to borrow from Brandon.
We're just getting deep right now in this podcast.
Yeah, super literary.
That one is very good, but it's heralded as one of the most epic American tales.
Blood Meridian or Blood Meridian?
Yeah, The Road's fantastic, but Blood Meridian is like masterpiece level. And so some of the characters in that book are just, I would call them archetypal figures that will never go away. And Disney knows about those, and Marvel
comics
knows about these. You know what I'm saying?
These
are, they're like tropes of characters that just never die. And that's because they've been like that for hundreds of thousands of years. Huh. So Cormac McCarthy is phenomenal at taking those things, like we were talking about earlier, taking a creative thing that's been done 100 times, but making it unique.
Right.
He is very, very good at that. Like No Country for Old Men. Oh, man.
Oh, that's a book.
Dude. Oh, yeah. That book is...
I did not know that.
That is very good. I mean,
the movie was also very good.
Movie's very good. The book, obviously, I think everyone says, I could read the book. But you got to read the book.
Okay. Yeah. I'll go read the book.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, man.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out Cormac.
Yeah, dude.
And such a crazy name.
Yeah.
Cormac.
Yeah. I wonder if he gave himself that name. Yeah.
An infinite amount of possibilities. Yeah, man. So what have you been writing recently?
Mm. Yeah, so recently, I wrote a song untitled as of right now. I actually finished writing it yesterday. Mm. So hopefully it'll sound okay and I won't mess it up. But like we were talking about earlier, the song is all about finding meaning in your life, because I think that's what everyone wants, right?
Right.
Everyone wants to find meaning. And I think you can't be too lazy about that. You gotta kind of seek it out. And I think meaning comes from personal responsibility. Everyone wants to change the world. Everyone's on Twitter. Everyone's on Facebook. You know, you're not going to change the world on Twitter, man. The best place to start, in my opinion, is to start with yourself. I think we act out the things that we believe more than we say the things that we believe, because you don't really know what you believe. Like, things change so fast in your life, you know, one year to the next. So really, like, the things that you actually believe, you act out, in my opinion. And so I think finding meaning in your life is all about personal responsibility and trying to humble yourself and work on yourself as a person. And when you get married, like I said, it's kind of a sacrifice because the tables turn. I believe in a correct marriage, you are now living for the other person. Almost everything you do is about that person instead of yourself, to a degree, obviously.
Right,
you want to keep yourself healthy, like all that, you know. But for the most part, you want to put that person above you. You're like a squad, and it's like the best teammate for life ever.
Right.
And so there's a lot of personal responsibility that goes into doing that right. And so this song, it's untitled right now. It's all about having that rock, knowing that there's stability there. There's meaning in life. You can seek it out. You can find it. In this version of meaning in life, it's about finding meaning in another person. You know, it's go out and find somebody. Get in the pit and try to love someone, Elijah.
Turn your cold heart around,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, because otherwise you just get bitter and resentful. Yeah. And that's when you start to hate the world.
And then that's the thing. It's like everybody wants to find a perfect relationship, right?
Doesn't exist.
A, it doesn't exist. And B, it doesn't fall into your lap. Like, you have to take a chance. You have to take a risk. You have to put
vulnerability.
Yourself out. And guess what? Got to get rejected. Because we all know people that are just sitting at home. Super miserable.
Yeah. It's funny how those things are so obvious to us, like about our friends. But when it's ourselves, it's almost a big question mark, right?
Exactly.
That's an interesting concept. But
self-realization is
the
most difficult.
So more about sacrifice, and this is a key theme of the song, is when you have a belief, you hold on to it, especially now. Whether you're religious or not religious, just, you know, anything like that, I firmly believe that this culture was kind of set up on religious themes, you know, under God, one for all.
Sure.
So even if you're not religious, you got to understand that most people now claim not to be religious or go to church or anything like that. The fear is, you're talking about Nietzsche, that something else is going to come along and jump into the foundation of that. And so what is it now? I think now it's, you know, pick your group, pick your identity,
right?
Whether you're
Democrat, Republican,
right,
vegan,
and so exactly all that, and really, what I think that is this a defense mechanism against the world, because you find comfort in these groups, but the danger in that is
you get dug in,
and you become blind. And for the sake of the group, you're willing to look at the right answer and just say, "Nah, that's wrong."
Yeah,
and everyone,
we're seeing that.
Yeah,
right
we're
now.
Seeing that right now, and right now. I think that is, you know. Whether you, like I said, you don't have to be religious, but you have to understand that human beings need meaning. And for the longest time, this country was built on meaning from religion. I'm not going to sit here and say whether that's right or wrong.
Yeah.
But what I am saying is it's changing. And I think people are finding meaning in things that are hollow and shallow. Group identities and identity politics and all this stuff. Like, go on Twitter, anything, you know, anything someone does something, it is insane.
Yeah.
And you know, we don't have to go into that, but I mean,
there's so much like vitriol in the air.
It's the outcry, you know, it's the outcry. And I think we'll get past it, just like we get past everything. But it's an intense thing because everyone just wants to love and be loved. I think it's the heart of it. And so this song is about that. But in order to let those old ideas die, you have to sacrifice. With sacrifice comes pain and hurt, but then you also get new and you get light and you get, you know, when you let something die and something better takes the place of it, that's human nature.
It was, that reminds me, one of the very first episodes of the podcast I did, I talked to a guy who's a glaciologist, and he's also a woodland firefighter.
Badass.
Yeah.
Okay.
Super badass. Mm-hmm. And he told me this thing about controlled burns. Mm. And so they would start all these fires.
Right. Yeah, I've heard about this. Yeah, yeah.
They have these little balls. They're like, they call them ping pong balls because they're the same size. they launch them from a helicopter and they fall down. They're like explosives. They ignite and they burn everything around. And I was like, why do you do that? He's like, there are a lot of types of trees that don't grow unless there's fire like that.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was like...
That's a perfect analogy.
Yeah, it is a good
analogy.
Sometimes
you got to scorch the forest to get some new oxygen, new life. And that is 100% true. I mean, look at anyone who's lost weight. Mm. Like, you got to go through some serious pain and struggle. But on the other end of that is a new life.
Yeah.
So it's like...
You're healthier.
Yeah.
You feel better.
Yeah. So, I don't know. A little pain is good for you, I think.
I think so. And, like, I think... Like, as you know, like, I'm really into, like, fitness and working out and all that stuff. Yeah. So, like, when I see stuff on TV where it's like, just eat this meal, just take this pill, you know, it's so easy. And I was like, it's probably not, bro. Because, like, for people that are into fitness, it's a grind every day. Oh, yeah. 6 a.m., you're in the gym deadlifting, power cleans, all this stuff. And then people just brush it up. Oh, genetics.
Right.
Dude.
Yeah. Right.
Dude, I'm genetically I'm a 110-pound skinny Asian kid.
Yeah, man.
You know, that's not genetics.
Yeah, that's
the way I look isn't genetic, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing with guitar. People are like, "Oh, man, you're so talented."
Yeah.
And it's like, "Thank you, but dude, I sucked for a long time." And I still think that I suck. Like, you look at I don't know how to pronounce the guy's last name, but I think his name is Art Menendez.
Mhm.
Just Instagram that guy. He is a monster on guitar. And so what do I do? Do I just say, oh, I'm never... comparison is the thief of joy. What am I... You know what I mean?
Great.
What am I just going to watch this guy on Instagram and never play guitar because I'll never be that good? Like, you got to go through the pain of sucking and messing up and...
You got to shred your fingers up.
Yeah. And I don't know. People want the easy way out, but...
Doesn't exist.
If you get handed something...
It's not really yours.
It's not really yours. That's why I think... I don't know. This might be some bro science, but I think generationally, like, people of wealthy families, I think they lose their fortune at about the third generation. It's because the first generation worked for it. The second generation...
At least they see the work.
They see the work, and they know what they're about to risk.
Mm-hmm.
But the third generation is so out of touch with what it took. So there's definitely something there.
I think so, too.
Resistance and pain and, the blues.
But going back to the untitled song.
Yeah, the untitled song. Yeah, it's a song about sacrifice and understanding that I think there is meaning in the world that you can find. And, you know, having the other view is dangerous. Oh, there's nothing out there for me. The world is just full of sadness and death.
That's not true.
You can choose to look at the world like that, but I don't think that's the right way.
Yeah. So let's hear it.
Let's do it. 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, went away, to start my day. Yeah, you're in my head, I'm in my bed. Your love gonna raise the dead. So give me love. Give me love, oh, give me love. Don't let it shine. You'll be mine. I love you all the time. I love you all the time. When it rains, when the light fades. Thoughts go round and round. The gears of this world do turn. Time don't care who gets burned. All you can do is hold on tight. Oh, turn on your love light. Give away yourself, give yourself, oh, someone else.
I'm always home. Yeah, I'm home. Never alone. My ship is moored. Survive the storm. This love will chart a course. Go seek your peace. Find your peace. Your sweet release. Let him lie. Don't feel sacrifice. Your old dog will die. The gears of this world do turn. Time don't care who gets burned. All you can do is hold on tight. Oh, turn on your love light and give away yourself. Give yourself away to someone else.
Dude, that's a great song too.
Bam. Yeah.
I do like your playing, and I mentioned this to you earlier. You know, I really do miss hearing it. I miss hearing it because
thanks,
there's
man.
A lot of singer-songwriters who are Jason Mraz knockoffs with yeah. the ukulele. And nothing against ukulele.
You bastards, ukulele bastards.
Nothing against yeah. ukulele. But this is like some old-school chicken-picking style of bluesy songwriting.
It's like I said before, it's just scary. Because when you, it's, you know, strumming is strumming.
Yeah.
Acoustic guitar, very vulnerable because you can hear everything.
Yeah.
You hear everything. And yeah. so, you know, I think a lot of it is just knowing that you're not going to hit every note. And you just got to embrace, like, especially when it comes to stuff like this where it's live.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to roll with it.
Yeah.
And you know, you hope the listener understands that it is a moment of authenticity.
Right.
And, you know.
Because you're going to play it back. It's not going to be the same.
Yeah.
Man, yeah. You could play it 10 times. It'll be different 10 times. That's mm-hmm. how intricate the guitar mm-hmm. work is. One of my professors at Berkeley, he was my mix one and mix two professor.
Mm.
His name is Ted Paddock. Awesome engineer.
Yeah.
Like a local legend out in Boston. He always used to say, close enough for rock and roll.
Yeah.
And I really
That's
empathize
cool.
with that because he was like, here's a guy, you know, and we were in like great sounding studio space with best musicians and stuff like that. And when things weren't perfect and like, you know, as a beginning engineer, like, that didn't sound perfect. Should we get another take?
Yeah.
Should we adjust the microphones? He's like, dude,
that's
close enough for rock and roll.
Yeah.
You're never going to get it perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in this day and age, you can with like, you know, the tuning software
right.
and so much of the stuff is synth,
mm-hmm.
you know, and stuff
mm-hmm.
like that. But like for acoustic singer-songwriter, for rock and roll, for blues, man, some of that stuff, like blues intrinsically isn't perfect because
mm-hmm.
you're bending everything.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then so it is good to see someone like you that, you know, it's not going to be perfect.
Mm. That's why I have utmost admiration for anyone who is, you know, a professional studio musician where you have to be perfect. And oftentimes it is not your music.
Yeah.
And so you have to perform under very pressured environments.
Yeah.
And oftentimes maybe it's not even what you like.
Yeah. And those guys are getting paid by the hour.
Wow.
So they need to nail it on the
yeah,
first,
right,
you know,
right,
couple
yeah.
takes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Studio musician. I know a bunch of studio musicians out in LA and
yeah.
New York.
That's hard
Those
life.
Guys are,
but they love it, right?
Yeah, they love it. And it's like sheet music, first day,
mm.
boom, sight read, everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that kind of mastery.
That's intense. Yeah. I mean, like I said earlier, you can go on social media and find 100 of those people.
Mm.
So what do? Just
yeah.
keep playing. You know?
Yeah. And you'll get to where you need to be.
Yeah.
You just need to accept it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's so true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. So what else is new?
What else is new, man? Let's see. I can't wait for this year because it's going to be a lot of music going on.
Yeah.
A lot of music. Yeah. I feel pretty good about it.
Tell me.
Doing the Eli Lev stuff, hopefully playing in some other live bands. Gypsy Sally's for all you musicians out there. They have a phenomenal open mic, open stage. I believe they do Tuesday nights. So if you wanted to, you could go sing your songs in the Vinyl Lounge, which I love that place.
Georgetown, right?
Georgetown, yeah.
Yep.
You can go sing your songs in the Vinyl Lounge. And then if you wanted to work on your live stuff, you can go jump in the main room and play with a band, just improv.
Do they have house band or is it just piecemeal? Like you'd be a lead guitarist and someone, I know how to play drums, and or do they have like a house band?
I think it changes every time, but mm-hmm. I know there's one gentleman who I have not yet met, but he pretty much runs the show there, and it's always different. But the sound integrity there and the stage is great.
Hmm.
So I'm going to start doing that a lot more.
Right.
I know Songbird, they have a new open mic,
yep.
which is really cool. I have not played. When I moved here, I think I did every single one. I must have. Yeah. If I didn't, I can't believe it. But that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, just get out there.
Just get out there. Yeah. So I'm going to start doing that a little more just to kind of shake off the cobwebs.
Mm.
But and then also getting back in the gym, man. Talk about that. Yeah.
Gains.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's my favorite.
I got my dad bod. It's good.
No, man. You gotta fight it.
Yeah, I know.
You gotta fight it.
Yeah. But I don't eat. I'm really good at maintaining.
Wait. So the keto kid, are you still keto?
No. So
everybody knows about keto
and
it's become like a huge fad diet.
You gotta be careful.
One of the things that I don't like about it is that you need to check your blood for ketosis.
Mm.
You need to make sure that you're in ketosis.
And if you want to be serious about
it. If you want to be serious about it. And for the long time, you were, well, when I first met you and then when you left, like you had lost a significant amount of weight.
Yeah, I lost like 40 pounds, I think, in less than a year. But even before that, I had lost 130. Right now, I probably gain back at least 30 of those pounds. Take those back for the team, please.
Thank
you, sir. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, for me now it is, I always used to be concerned with weight, but now it's all about feeling good.
Mm.
You hit a certain age and you're like, I just want to feel good.
Right.
You know, I want to wake up and have that energy. And the biggest thing, like whatever thing you're doing, I think Whole 30 is like the it thing now. Mm. Just go by how you feel. Don't read articles and let people tell you how you should feel and, you know, your friends and all that. Like, just try some stuff out. With that being said, if you're pounding Snickers and Twix and stuff and you stop eating that stuff, you're going to feel like shit.
Yeah.
But you have to ride it out.
Mm.
Like, your body switches its fuel source. So the best thing you can do is to don't cut yourself off from food completely. Like, eat as much broccoli as you want. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Eat the broccoli, even grass-fed steak, all that stuff. But, don't stop eating sugar. And then after the first week, say, oh, I feel like shit, so I'm just screwed. Yeah. It's like, yeah, well, your body is, like, purging itself of all the evil that you continuously put in it. So, I think I know how to lose weight really well. But it's all about feeling good now.
Yeah.
So I've tried to optimize specifically digestion.
Hmm.
So the thing that you can go weird with keto.
Probiotics.
Probiotics are great. Mm. You need some fiber. Well, at least I need some fiber.
Yeah.
I need some fiber.
Yeah.
And when you do keto, you can really
tell.
Some people thrive, man. And that's the first thing. Everybody's different. Everybody's different. You know, depending on your bloodline, like say you're, I'm Italian. So. Mm. The theory goes that you look at the source of food from peoples of that area, so say Mediterranean, you might thrive, and I say might, you might thrive on that kind of food if you know your heritage. And this is, you can look this up, but like, it's crazy. Like, I tried to go, I did vegan just to see what it was all about, you know? I did vegan for between 2 weeks and a month. I lost about 15 pounds just trying this. I did a juice cleanse, that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the weight does come off, but first thing you got to know is it's muscle. And so now you've lost weight and you look skinny, but you're still fat.
You're skinny fat.
Yeah.
Skinny fat.
And also, if you're a male,
there are
consequences.
Your power.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There are consequences to that you sacrifice. And then your mood, you know.
Yeah, so. I would be super pissed if I couldn't eat steaks all the time. So
yeah, and you powerful tomahawk steaks, man.
Yeah, gotta get them.
Yeah, you guys should all follow. That's your personal Instagram. Yeah, personal. Maybe I don't want to put that out there. I'm sorry. That's right. You're not missing anything. It's cats and steak.
Yeah, it's literally pictures of my cat, pictures of steaks. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. But yeah, well, it is good to see that you're putting an effort into it. And like you were just saying, you know, It takes effort. Everything is effort.
Yeah.
I was just listening to David Goggins on Rogan.
Oh man, that guy is inspiration fuel.
That guy makes, and I'm pretty religious about what I eat and the gym and you know how I live my life. This guy just makes me feel like a slob,
right?
Like a slobby fat guy. And one of the things that he says, it's you have to constantly put yourself in trying times, either physically or mentally. And people ask him, so when are you going to be done? When are you going to ride off into the sunset?
Wag the finger.
Yeah. Mm-mm-mm. And he was like,
no.
There is no end. Yeah. And I was like, oh my gosh. Cause like so many people are like, we're in a society where we work, retire.
Yeah.
And I'm in Florida, you know, sitting on the beach and just
there's always an end,
go.
Right? Yeah. I will struggle now, but not forever.
Yeah.
No one wants to hear that. Well, you might have to keep this thing going. Yeah.
And that's what Goggins was saying. He's like, there is no end.
Yeah.
It's always there.
Yeah. He's a freak. I love that guy.
I love it. Yeah. Because when I listen to him talk, it's like, if he could do it,
it's real. Yeah.
Then I could do it too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
I don't want to take it to that extreme where he's running, you know, 150 mile races in the desert, you know, back to back and stuff like that, or doing 4,000 pull-ups. But like, if he can do 4,000, I can do 500. You know what I mean? That's kind of like how I do it.
It all goes back to personal responsibility, you know, being accountable for yourself, because it's so easy to say, oh, well, I'm going out for a happy hour with my colleagues. I guess I'll just have a beer. Because, you know, you're going to get socially bitch slapped for not buying a beer, not eating the nachos. Right. Someone, guaranteed. If you go out with 10 of your friends and you're at a bar and, you know,
you order like a vodka soda because you're watching.
Right. Or like not even that. Like, let me just get a water.
Yeah.
Someone. It's usually you, Elijah. Someone. Just kidding.
What?
But probably.
Yeah.
Someone is going to be like, oh, no beer. Oh, no. And worst is family. The worst, the people that love you the most. No, it's so true. The people that love you the most are the ones, because they're uncomfortable.
Mm.
You know, they're uncomfortable watching you do the thing that's hard for them. And so they get shitty.
Man, that's
they
true.
They get shitty. You know?
That's so true, right?
But it sucks because you know that you're doing the right thing and that they know you're doing the right thing. But why is this weird?
They don't want you to do the right thing.
Why is this weird? It's because it's easy to be complacent. So, Claire and I think Claire's going Whole 30. Mm. I'm going Whole 30, but I've been doing Whole 30 for like 3 years.
Right.
But now instead my favorite book, by the way, is a book called, and this is the shittiest, cheesiest name, but it's called The Perfect Health Diet. Here's the catch, is that it's written by a couple, husband and wife, an astrophysicist and a molecular biologist.
Okay, and so pretty just normal people.
Yeah, right, exactly. And so if you want a scientific landscape of just science instead of, paleo Bible, keto Bible, all that, I would highly advise, almost implore anyone to read that book. So I do Whole 30, but with a little bit of starch. So either sweet potato, rice, tapioca, cassava.
Man, even with the rice.
Yeah, a little rice is good. And so like rice noodles. So like ramen, love ramen, pho, that kind of stuff.
Right.
It's just very good for your digestion and your stomach.
Mm.
So definitely check out some starch. Don't be afraid of carbs, but know which ones you shouldn't have.
Yeah.
You know,
bread.
Yeah, anything like with enriched flour or corn oil.
Refined carbohydrates. Yeah.
I feel like people know this stuff.
Yeah.
Like you know what I mean? There's so much
It's
info
just
on
so
it.
Hard. Yeah. It's just so hard to actually do it. Executing that during the holidays, like, and here's
Tight
the thing.
Rope.
You fall off, that's perfectly okay.
Yeah.
You cheat on your this is one of the things that I love. I hate being on social media, but one of the things I do like about it is I can follow the people that I'm really interested in and hear what they have to say.
Mm.
And this one girl, bodybuilder girl, said, you know, I cheated on my diet today, but one day of cheating is not going to undo 6 months of training.
Yeah.
We need to think like that. It's totally. It's all right. It's just that when all right, you know, that turns into a trend, that's when you're done.
Yeah. In fact, there's phenomenal science that suggests, you know, say you have been grinding it out and you have a weekend. If you take a fast day after that weekend, there are a number of things that are absolutely fantastic about you piling food into your face that weekend. And then having a fast day. So check out intermittent fast. This is like old stuff. Like I feel like now everyone knows,
but everybody knows
intermittent fasting. But Victor Longo is a doctor. Mm. Check out his fasted mimicking diet. Basically, what you can do is go on a restricted calorie diet for, I think, between 3 and 5 days. And it emulates if you would have fasted for, I don't know, 2 or 3 days. But because you're on restricted calorie, and I think it's protein, so you're eating like a lot of vegetables, you get the benefits of going on a full fast, but you're still eating. I'm not going to try it and remember all the crazy,
like numbers,
amazing
like
things that it does for you. But your sugar levels and your HGH, everyone thinks HGH is like for bodybuilders. No, human growth hormone is
you
like...
You need that in your body.
Yeah, your nails, your ability to recover, HGH is everything. So definitely check that out. That is like...
This is turning into like a baby Joe Rogan podcast, but with awesome music.
Yeah.
All right, let's get back to the music. So let's play a song, dude. What do you want to play?
Yeah, man.
What are you going to play?
Let's see. So I got the song. It's called Reminds Me of You, and it is really about, it's your classic breakup song, but it's one of those things where it's after you've broken up with your person, but now you have to purge all the things in your life down to... simple thing. So the first line is, your hair is still stuck in my comb.
Right.
Like, you know, your girl just comb, you know, maybe she was late for work, got to comb the hair, bang, and now she's gone and you got to comb your hair and oh man, like literally she's right there. And so it's all little stuff like that. The little things that remind you of the other person, right down to, you know,
like the food in the fridge and stuff like that.
All that stuff. And like, if you had have lived with that person, one of you moved out, that space is just kind of like ghost town. Everything you look at, everything you do kind of reminds you of that person.
Right
down to the TV show you're watching.
Right.
I'm not going to watch this show anymore because we were watching it. You know what I mean? Like, why do I want to watch this? And so it's all little stuff like that. And I think everyone resonates with that, especially if you've committed yourself to years with someone.
Right.
That's when it's really tough because now you got friends and, you know, all that. So
the merging of the worlds.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, When did you write this song?
This was in between Colorado and Maryland. So
this happened to you?
Kind of. There's a little storytelling involved here. So it's a real thing, but the story is true. But everything in the song, like all the details are not necessarily true.
Right, it is
more of like a dramatization, if you will. But yeah, I had a breakup. I was with someone for about 3 years. We broke up. Our lives were just... you know, our lives and the
heading
things we wanted to do. It's not because, you know, someone cheated on another person. None of that. It was just, you know, you going down two different paths and you can see the fork in the road. And so you call it quits.
Cut your losses.
Exactly. And so this song is about those little things that remind you of, you know.
That person.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Someone that you have said I love you to 100 times is now a perfect stranger to a degree. Yeah, it's just about that. And like I said, everyone... for the most part, it doesn't matter who you are. If you are someone who has an emotional connection with another person, maybe you're not even dating. Maybe it's just someone.
Right.
It's just about that separation. And there's a period where you're like, I'm never going to find this again. You know, this was so special. But the fact is there's like 7 billion people in the world and you're going to meet someone else.
Yeah.
Like, stop it. Relax. Like, just keep going. You got to meet more people. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, man.
Yeah. Let's play.
Hear it.
All right. Your hair still stuck in my comb. Your shoes on the porch lie to me when they tell me you're home. The shampoo in the shower, it ain't mine. And the dog always thinks it's you when the doorbell chimes. I stop watching a favorite show halfway through, the season ain't that good, and it reminds me. Oh,
records you left don't get played. I reckon they missed the needle, same way I'm missing you today. The dishes are holding me in contempt, and the drying rack still empty since the day you left. Haven't slowed to close this tired bar the whole week through. It's a place I go after working home, and it reminds me. Oh, you. Getting old. Haven't eaten my own words for dinner. Oh, regret how I'm more. The bed sheets have started a mutiny. Haven't had a warm night's sleep since you walked out on me. So I walk and pace these streets alone, whole night through. Neighbors must think I'm crazy, but they don't know. Everything reminds me of you.
Yeah, man. Right. So that song is A, it's great.
Hey, thanks.
Like all most right. of your songs, but not all of your songs are good, Anthony. No, I'm just kidding.
No, you might be one of the only people that actually know that.
So check this out. Like this song, like you were talking about, it is very relatable. And everyone can resonate with this.
Yeah.
And where sometimes I feel like your style of playing may not be very palatable musically.
No.
Just because of the way that it is.
Yeah,
like, we absolutely. Don't need to explain it. It's it's not Jason Mraz.
Yeah.
It's not, you're not gonna, Bruno Mars.
Yeah, you're not going to put this on and go to the football game. You know, you're not
exactly.
going to put this on and, like, pregame with your homies.
Yeah.
You know?
But this song is very relatable in its lyricism.
Yeah.
And also the delivery, too, is very, you know.
GC, you know, very classic singer-songwriter chords. But yeah, I really wanted to home in on almost personifying these inanimate things, but really because you give them emotional power, they might as well be real.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
They become characters in the story.
Exactly. They become characters like my bed sheets have started a mutiny. It feels like that.
Yeah.
I can't stay warm. Like, I can't go to bed. And so there's a little personification of things there. But I just really wanted to be hitting on something that I know is
universal.
Yeah, exactly. And,
for sure.
And to make it my own, I kind of was like, well, what are those things? You know, what exactly are those things that you would see? There's a dog in the song.
Right.
Imagine you have a dog with someone. Oh my God, that's so brutal.
Imagine if you had a kid with someone.
I know.
That's even more brutal.
Well, damn.
Yeah. Well,
struggle.
Well, one of the things that really stands out about all of your songs in general is the lyricism, like the way you tell stories with your
it's got to be a story for me.
Exactly. Like, you know, going back to mountain songs, all of those songs tell a little story, and that is kind of like your calling card as well. So do you feel like your lyricism comes from you know, having such a great relationship with writing and books and reading and literature.
Definitely. I mean, all that stuff. Anyone that knows me, like, shout out to Tim Nicholson. Shout out to Tim Nicholson. There's this cat named Joseph Campbell, and he is like the preeminent figure of kind of pay. So like when you watch a Disney movie, we were talking about this earlier, the stories that you're watching are thousands of years old.
Sure.
And Joseph Campbell was the one to point out that there's a pattern. There's a cyclical pattern. And there's a reason why we love stories. Have you seen the new Black Mirror movie?
No,
it's like interactive.
I mean, yeah, the choose your own adventure style.
It's a little gimmicky, but it's cool.
Okay. Check it out for sure.
So to kind of paint a very quick analogy, the lead character is having a crisis, and he's saying like, you know, someone's watching me, someone's controlling my actions. It's you. You're controlling what the lead character does. And there's a therapist, and she's saying, this is so mundane. This is so ordinary. Why would anyone care about this? This is just your life. Like, don't dramatize your life. This is just every day. No one cares.
Right.
But the truth is, why do we watch movies about people's everyday life? There's something there, and that's because stories relay meaning and truth, like little bits of it. When you have a structure, like a song, and you're not telling a story, I feel like it's a missed opportunity, because what else is it for? What else is it for? Other than just nodding your head in the car. Okay, right. Fine, that's cool. Of course, you're going to have different moods, right? I just want to watch some shitty reality TV. Just give me some garbage, like escapist. That's great. And not every song has to be like a
super deep,
a biblical freaking like voyage to meaning. You know what I mean?
Right, don't
get me wrong. There's time and place for everything. But as a writer, I feel like I'm wasting my time with this if I'm not trying to encapsulate some kind of truth. The goal is to have someone, like we were talking about earlier, you don't want to make it too personal, but if you can make it personal, really the best thing you can do, and this is Hemingway, the best thing you can do is after someone reads your book, watches your movie, listens to your song, did that really happen to the author? Is that real life?
Right.
Or did they make it up? Is it fiction? And I think the best is both.
Right.
It's both. You know, like Hemingway was a World War I, I believe. Mm-hmm. And he was an ambulance medic.
Mm-hmm.
If you read A Farewell to Arms, when he wrote that, people were like, did this really happen? To my knowledge, he never really commented because he didn't want anyone to know.
Right.
You should be like, if someone hears one of my songs, I want them to be like, wow, did you really break up with someone? And the answer is, well, yes, but like we were talking about earlier, it's not
right.
Every line is not a moment of
yeah, it's not history. Autobiographical.
Exactly. So you kind of want to have both. It's a hard thing to do. It's very tough.
You got to walk that line.
Yeah, man, it's very tough. So I hope that, you know, whatever song I continue to, because it's all one song, I know it sounds cheesy, but it's kind of true. Whatever song I continue to sing, that there is a little confusion. You know, I think that's good.
Right.
You know, is this real? Is it not? I don't know.
Well, see, that's why pro wrestling is so great. Is it real?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we're not going down that road.
Oh, man. I would say it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it really doesn't.
It doesn't matter. It
doesn't matter.
Yeah. Maybe you got one more song?
One more song.
Want to do one more?
One more.
Okay, all right.
Well, you're going to do one more.
All right, yeah.
I get to listen to okay. one more. Tell me about this song.
Oh, man. So this one might get me in a little bit of trouble. This one is just a classic role reversal on a playa. What if a lady decided that she was going to take the offensive on some advances? Because, look, there are a lot of relationships in the world. Everyone wants to paint guys as all we want is one thing.
Right.
But the truth is, I think that we all want one thing most of the time, and that the pursuer and the pursuee can switch.
Mm.
And so this is about a little role reversal. Once again, this song is not about me, okay?
It's just...
It is... actually, the inspiration from the song came from someone that I knew freshman year of college who was the Don Juan. You know, he was the guy.
Mm.
Like, the door to his dorm room was always closed. And it wasn't because he was, like, praying.
Or studying.
Or studying, exactly. And so there was this one girl who got him really good. And like, he was on the other end of feeling some hurt. You know what I'm saying now?
Yeah.
Like and so when the tables switch like that, it's like a crazy shift.
Yeah.
And so that was the impetus for this song.
Nice, man.
Yeah.
It's fun. I do like stuff like this.
It's a fun song. Yeah. It's called All of You.
All right, let's hear it, man.
All right. 2, 3.
Yeah, she's 6 foot tall, want it all. She got legs for days. She gonna raise your car. She want more. All of you. Hips at the dance floor, gonna leave you one more. Better pick up the piece, she'll leave you at the door without. And hide you. What you gonna do? Turning blue. Hell, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Ain't your average chick? How much can she drink? Probably more than you. Lying to yourself, what your feelings, what you felt, too real to ignore, too easy to tell anymore. More of you, you know it's true. What can I do? First mistake's on me, you won't get the next for free. Am I the first not on his knees for you, dear? Like to think I had her best part. Not talking about her heart, like a pretty rebuild that won't start. Coma still wanna hold her. Days getting dark, my nights getting cold without. See, I could travel the world for the love of a girl, but the shit's getting old, no shine to the pearl anymore. What's a man to do without you? Going blue. Just another notch on a bell. Always wondered how it fell. Dangling that carrot down the kingdom come dear. Head games in outer space. She'll put you in your place. Didn't bury without a trace. Yeah. All of you.
Man, that is a great song.
It's fun.
Super. This is more in line with Anthony's bluesy stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
It's
bluesy stuff. I mean, like I said, this is my wheelhouse. This is where I live. So
yeah, a solo break at the end.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so, you know,
my favorite. That's one of the things, man. Even when we were doing songs that we had, you know, kind of put structure to for mountain songs.
Yeah.
Your solo breaks are always different every time.
You gotta be in the moment.
Yeah.
You know? I feel like when you try to contain it, there's like diminishing returns.
Hmm.
You know, if you play the same thing over and over again and it sounds good, it's always gonna sound good, cool. But I like to just, whatever the moment kind of says at that time, I mean, you kind of like subconsciously tap into that unknown and hopefully it's good.
Hippie with it.
Yeah, maybe.
But it
is
like that. It really is like that. Like when you are in the zone, like, you know, going full circle with it, when you are in the zone, wherever you're drawing that inspiration from the caverns of your memories,
muscle memory, coupled
with, you know, how you're feeling at the moment.
Yes,
yeah, man.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah. It's
you see the same thing in MMA.
Yeah.
You know, you could make the analogy there. Like there are 100 different ways you might be able to get out of this one hold, you know, like jiu-jitsu and stuff like that. it's the same thing. It's the same thing. It's
like a million factors are involved in why you chose that way.
And it's even unknown to me, but I love little stuff like that. Mm. Just throwing it into a song. I have this weird relationship with loop pedals. If you really think about the concept of a loop pedal, it basically says, I don't need anyone else.
And for people that don't know what a loop pedal is, it's a guitar effect. You plug into it.
Yeah.
And you...
It's very popular.
Yeah. You play something and it will play the same musical phrase back. It just records it and loops it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And loop pedal.
And then you play on top of it.
Correct. You can play on top of it. When I first looked at that, I was like, this is amazing. It's freeing. First of all, monetarily speaking, you don't have to pay someone to play the part. You can just play it. But on the other token, it's like... Another subjective thing, like, is it better to just try and nail that lead line in between your chords and be a boss? or is it better to kind of play it safe? You know, you
hit the chords. Have the backing.
You're right. You hit the chords. And a lot of people do it. There's like...
And no hate to people. No.
I'm not trying to sound pretentious or elitist and say my way is the best. But for me, it is way more fun because then it's like, wow, I leaned off the cliff of... failure, but still
looked over the edge, and I'm still here
because it's scary, man. I mean,
and that is what it is like hearing you play.
It's scary, I know.
Yeah. You're like, is this guy gonna get it this
time?
You know, when we were recording,
I
would be like, come on, is this
screw this up? Yeah, I know. Yeah,
they always say there's no reward without huge risk,
exactly.
And sometimes that is. That
I mean, just go listen to there's a great video, and I would like. Realized this early on. I must have been 16 when I saw this video. Jimi Hendrix, Hear My Train A-Comin', and it's him. If you know you've got the right video, if it's him with a 12 string guitar, he's sitting on a stool and it looks like he's like, you know, it's like a photo shoot. I guess the story goes that someone just handed him this guitar and they're like, you want to play a song for us? And this was before, like, you know, tracking and editing for obviously you had those things, but so there's just a camera in this guy's face. He wasn't ready to perform, and he messes up, like, in the beginning. He's like, I can't, I need to do this again. Like, I just need to start over. And that's when I was like, oh, my God. Like,
Even the greatest of all time
messes up and needs to take another take, you know? And that's just how it goes. So that video was, like, really blew me away and was like, oh, these guys aren't perfect. Okay. That's when you have that inkling of possibility where the spark hits and you're like, ooh, maybe I can do this.
Yeah.
And as soon as you start to believe, that's all you need.
Super inspirational words.
Oh, man. Anthony. I don't know.
Have you seen that video where Stevie Ray Vaughan is playing and his guitar string breaks?
Oh, yeah.
They switch the guitar. Actually, a crazier one is when B.B. King is playing and he changes the string himself.
Oh.
There's an awesome video of him. So, like, sometimes it's external.
Right.
And he's singing and playing. And so, like, his band is behind him for sure.
Sure.
He's still playing, like, lead lines while he's changing the guitar string.
That's on another level. I mean, the thing about B.B. King is he's had such a long career. Mm. The focal point or the climactic moments of his career kind of often get lost in the fray just because there's so much of it to look at.
Yeah.
My favorite performance of him, I think, is, like, I don't know. I think it's 1974 in Africa.
Mm. Yeah. I know that record.
Oh, my God, dude. I never thought that B.B. King was like a shredder. When he was at his prime,
dude,
that guy was a monster.
You also need to listen to Live at the Regal.
Okay.
That changed my whole life.
Mm.
When I was taking guitar lessons with Tomo Fujita, the guy that took...
John Mayer?
Yeah, guitar teacher. Mm-hmm. Powerful Tomo Fujita. And then, because I'm blues guy too.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, you got to listen to Live at the Regal
and
just embrace it in his Japanese accent. Hiraisha, you have to listen, you know.
That's a very good
Live at the Regal
accent. Japanese people love the blues.
And Tomo is a beast on the blues, man. I have most of his records. And then on the last day of lessons with him, I had him sign it for me. And I still have it somewhere.
That's awesome, man. That's very cool.
Yeah, it's sad because I rarely play guitar anymore. But that's all.
It's always there for you, man. Yeah. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah,
because
this past Christmas, I recorded something, just for my family.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I was like, dang, man, I am out of practice. Like, Yeah, but
it's true. Still, like, yeah,
you fall into it. It's like putting on a baseball glove. You got to break it in a little bit, but
it's interesting because I feel like the average person has a lot of things that they could see themselves doing. Mm. Like there are these things that kind of surface in your life, these paths, you know, like I love fly fishing. I never thought that I would be a fly fisherman. Mm. You know, my dad taught me how to fish, not fly fishing, just regular, you know, throw it in the water and you know, cross your fingers. Fly fishing, there's a lot more going on. I'm not going to go into it, but...
that's for another podcast.
Yeah, that's a whole other podcast. But it's a tremendous amount of failure before you get to a point that you're even, like, able to do anything.
Right.
Like, the first step is getting it in the water, okay? Mm. Once you get it in the water, your fish is going to bite. Okay, fine. A fish bites. Now what are you going to do? Break the line. And so it's like, it's just, you know, it's this whole...
Never-ending series of failures.
So I always just wonder, like, how many... In what alternate universe could I have been, like, an engineer? Or could I have been, like, a Dave Goggins? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there are all these possibilities. And so...
And then
who the hell knows?
Yeah, but then you start thinking, going down those...
Oh, the what-if stuff.
Yeah, the what-if stuff. Then it's like, would I have met my wife?
Right, right. Every choice.
If I was David Goggins, would I have met my wife? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Would I be talking to you right now? You know, it's one of the butterfly effect. Yeah. Horrible movie. Good concept.
Sorry, Ashton.
Yeah, not your greatest work. But yeah, man, we've been talking for a minute. So
all right.
Do you have anything that you wanted to say?
Definitely look for me out there in the wild. I'll be playing with Eli Lev and The Fortunes Found. I think January and February are going to kind of be like sharpening of the sound. I think we got a couple things coming up, but I think my website, like the lease on that just popped, so I got to go and...
Re-up.
Yeah, I got to go re-up. Well, Wix, they don't do music distribution anymore, and so I have to find another way to get it up on there. Yeah, something like that. So
something.
But you can get me on Instagram, AnthonyDante75. Definitely go check out Eli Lev. I think we got a tour coming up in March,
nice.
Philly, New York,
nice,
and a handful of other things in between. So I'll be out there, but I'll mostly be hopefully going to places like Gypsy Sally's.
Nice.
Just trying to get back in the groove,
yeah,
you know?
Work out your material and
that's
stuff
right.
like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So.
Yeah, man. Well, dude, it was great to see you again. It was great to, you know, hear your music again. I, you know, I'm not only, you know, the producer of your EP, but, you know...
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big fan of your music.
Thanks,
I don't think I can produce music that I'm not a fan of. And so it was great to hear your sound again. You're playing, your voice, always on par. Super interesting to talk to. You got to come back again.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm so proud of you for, you've brought this little room so far, man. This is like the coolest thing ever. I love this.
It's a work in progress.
Yeah.
We're going to watch.
Yeah,
it's going to be good.
So I'll be passing off information to a few people who I think would really enjoy coming on here.
Definitely,
so,
definitely.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right, man.
All right, dude. Talk to you soon.
Anthony Dante, ladies and gentlemen. And there you have it. The 15th episode of the Lucha Lounge podcast is in the books. I had a great time talking with Anthony, and I hope you enjoyed the conversation and his performance as well. If you want to see what he's up to, you can follow him on Instagram at AnthonyDante75 or go to AnthonyDante.com. If you'd like to support the Lucha Lounge podcast, please follow us on Instagram at Lucha Lounge Network and subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Google Podcasts. If you like what you've heard, please leave a 5-star rating and some nice comments. I'd really, really appreciate it. I have a bunch of interesting guests lined up in the upcoming months, so stay tuned. And I guess that's it. Until next time, bye.